Hello and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. It's April the 6th, and as usual, I'm kind of frazzled on a Monday, as it goes. A little more so maybe than normally. Friday, I had a wonderful but very exhausting day. I got up at 4 a.m. and went to Berlin for the day to speak at the Republica conference, along with some people who I love to see when I get the chance, Jimmy Wales and Larry Lessig and some others. Unfortunately, I didn't really get to see any of them because I had maybe 15 minutes free the whole day that I was there. I did get to catch up with Johannes from Monochrome in Vienna. We had a good chat. But I did give a talk there that was very, very well received. And the video's online. If you Google Republica Doctorow, it pops right out. The other so I had sort of 4 days catching up to do today instead of three, because I spent Friday in Berlin. The other thing that I had to that's keeping me from being 100% today is the baby is sick. She's got the rotavirus or some gastrointestinal viral something or other, and poor little kid is just barfing her guts out. She turned 14 months on Friday, and this is really her first major bug, apart from a couple of colds and a little ear infection, and she's just miserable, and she's trying to be brave, but it's tough. She gets seized by these tummy cramps and just cries, and I know exactly how she feels. I used to get a lot of tummy bugs when I was a little kid too, and maybe it runs in the family, but we're home this week. My wife's home today, and I'm home tomorrow, and then we'll see how it goes on Wednesday. The doctor said she might be better by Wednesday and able to go back to daycare. But in the meantime, the poor little kid is just in agony. I feel terrible for her. So yeah, I was up half the night, and Alice was up three quarters of the night. And the good thing on the horizon here, apart from Makers chugging along towards its publication date in October, I've just gotten a few more typos in on the manuscript, and the other good thing, of course, is that on Friday I'm headed out to Leeds, to Bradford here in the UK for the EasterCon, the National Science Fiction Convention. I'm sure I'll see some of you there. But the other good thing is that work continues on the short story collection that I've been noodling with for the last couple of weeks, that I had the idea for back in San Francisco when I saw how good the galleys that I'd had printed by Lulu.com looked. I really think I'm going to do this, a self-published short story collection that's really going to try and test out all the different things you can do with self-published media that has very low capital outlay and very high upside. So more about that as time goes by, but I'll tease you with the title. It's called With a Little Help, and also with the some of the methodology, which is that I'm shortly going to start weekly production meetings on Twitter, where I'll just come up with a tag and invite anyone who wants to come along to just give me suggestions and feedback on things like the title, whether or not With a Little Help sounds like the kind of book you'd want to read. I'll let you know more as the weeks go by. But without dragging out this intro too long, I think I'll skip right now into Someone Comes to Town, Someone Leaves Town, my 2005 Tor Books novel. The Bell Boardroom looked more like a retail operation than a back office, decked out in brand-consistent livery, from the fabric-dyed rag carpets to the avant-garde lighting fixtures. They were giving espressos by a young secretary barista whose skirt and top number was some sort of reinterpreted rave-wear outfit toned down for the corporate workplace. "So this is the new Bell," Kurt said once she had gone. "Our tax dollars at work." "This is good work," Alan said, gesturing at the blown-up artwork of pan-ethnic models who are extraordinary but not beautiful looking on the walls. The Bell redesign had come at the same time as the telco was struggling back from the brink of bankruptcy, and the marketing firm they'd hired to do the work had made its name on the strength of the campaign. "Makes you feel like using a phone is a really futuristic, cutting-edge activity," he said. His contact at the semi-privatized corporation was a young kid who shopped at one of his protege's designer furniture stores. He was a young Turk who'd made his name for himself quickly in the company through a couple of ISP acquisitions at fire sale prices after the dot bomb, which he'd executed flawlessly, integrating the companies into Bell's network with hardly a hiccup. He'd been very polite and guardedly enthusiastic when Alan called him and had invited him down to meet some of his colleagues. Though Alan had never met him, he recognized him the minute he walked in as the person who had to go, with the confident voice he'd heard on the phone. "Lyman," he said, standing up and holding out his hand. The guy was slightly Asian-looking, tall, with a sharp suit that managed to look casual and expensive at the same time. He shook Alan's hand and said, "Thanks for coming down." Alan introduced him to Kurt, and then Lyman introduced them both to his colleagues, a gender parody posse of young, smart-looking people, along with one graybeard, literally, he had a Unix beard of great rattiness and gravitas, who had no fewer than 7 devices on his belt, including a line tester and a GPS. Once they were seated, Alan snuck a look at Kurt, who had narrowed his eyes and cast his gaze down into the business cards he'd been handed. Alan hadn't been expecting this. He'd figured on him finding himself facing down a group of career bureaucrats, and Kurt was clearly thrown for a loop, too. "Well, Alan, Kurt, it's nice to meet you," Lyman said. "I hear you're working on some exciting stuff."
"We are," Alan said. "We're building a citywide mesh wireless network using unlicensed spectrum that will provide high-speed internet connectivity absolutely gratis."
"That's ambitious," Lyman said, without the skepticism that Alan had assumed would greet his statement. "How's it coming?"
"Well, we've got a bunch of Kensington Market covered," Alan said. "Kurt's been improving the hardware design, and we've come up with something cheap and reproducible."
He opened his tub and handed out the access points, housed in gray, high-impact plastic junction boxes. Lyman accepted one solemnly and passed it on to his graybeard, then passed the next on to an East Indian woman in horn-rimmed glasses whose bitten-down fingernails immediately popped the latch and began slightly stroking the hardware inside, tracing the connections. The third landed in front of Lyman himself.
"So what do they do?"
Alan nodded at Kurt. Kurt put his hands on the table and took a breath.
"They've got 3 network interfaces. We can do any combination of wired and wireless cards. The OS is loaded on a flash card. It auto-detects any wireless cards and auto-configures them to seek out other access points. When it finds a peer, they negotiate a client-server relationship based on current load, and then the client then associates with the server. There's a key exchange that we use to make sure that rogue APs don't sneak into the mesh, and a self-healing routine that we use to switch routes if the connection drops or if we start to see too much packet loss."
The graybeard looked up.
"It is a radio for talking to God," he said.
Lyman's posse laughed, and after a second, so did Kurt. Alan must have looked confused, for Kurt elbowed him in the ribs and said, "It's from Indiana Jones," he said.
"Aha," Alan said. That movie had come out long before he'd come to the city. He hadn't seen a movie until he was almost 20.
As was often the case, the reference to a film made him feel like a Martian. The graybeard passed his unit on to the others at the table.
"Does it work?" he said.
"Yeah," Kurt said.
"Well, that's pretty cool."
Kurt blushed. "I didn't write the firmware, just stuck it together from parts of other people's projects."
"So what's the plan?" Lyman said. "How many of these are you going to need?"
"Hundreds eventually," Alan said. "But for starters, we'll be happy if we can get enough to shoot down to 151 front.
"You're going to try and peer with someone there?" The East Indian woman had plugged the AP into a riser under the boardroom table and was examining its blinking lights.
"Yeah," Alan said, "that's the general idea." He was getting a little uncomfortable. These people weren't nearly hostile enough to their ideas.
"Well, that's very ambitious," Lyman said. His posse all nodded as though he'd paid them a compliment, though Alan wasn't sure. Ambitious could certainly be code for ridiculous.
"How about a demo?" the East Indian woman said.
"Of course," Kurt said. He dug out his laptop, a battered thing held together with band stickers and gaffer tape, and plugged in a wireless card.
The others started to pass him back his access points, but he shook his head.
"Just plug him in," he said, "here or in another room nearby. That'd be cooler."
A couple of the younger people at the table picked up 2 of the APs and headed out for the hallway. "Put one on my desk," Lyman told them, "and the other at reception."
Alan felt a sudden prickle at the back of his neck, though he didn't know why, a random premonition that they were on the brink of something very bad happening. This wasn't the kind of vision that Brad would experience, that faraway look followed by a snap to into the now, eyes filled with certitude about the dreadful future. More like a goose walking over his grave, a tickle of badness.
The East Indian woman passed Kurt a VGA cable that snaked into the table's guts and down into the riser on the floor. She hit a button on a remote, and an LCD projector mounted in the ceiling began to hum, projecting a rectangle of white light on one wall. Kurt wiggled it into the backside of his computer and spun down the thumb screws, hit a button, and then his desktop was on the wall, 10 feet high. His wallpaper was a picture of a group of black-clad, kerchief protesters charging a police line of batons and gas grenades. A closer look revealed that the protester running in the lead was probably Kurt. He tapped at his touchpad, and a window came up, showing the relative strength signals for 2 of the APs. A moment later, the third came online. I've been working with this network visualizer app, Kurt said. It tries to draw logical maps of the network topology, with false coloring denoting packet loss between the hops. It's a pretty good proxy for distance between the two APs. More like the fade, the graybeard said. Fade is a function of distance, Kurt said. Alan heard the dismissal in his voice and knew that they were getting into a dick-swinging match. Fade is a function of geography and topology, the graybeard said quietly. Kurt waved his hand. Whatever, sure. Geography, topology, distance. It's a floor wax and a dessert topping. I'm not being pedantic, the graybeard said. You're not just being pedantic, Lyman said gently, watching the screen on which four animated jaggy boxes were jumbling and dancing as they reported on the throughput between the routers and the laptop. Not just pedantic, the graybeard said. If you have a lot of these boxes in known locations with no nominal throughput, you can use them as a kind of sensor array. When throughput drops between point foo and point bar, it will tell you something about the physical world between point foo and point bar. Kurt looked up from his screen with a thoughtful look. Huh? Like whether a tree has lost its leaves in the night, or whether there were a lot of people standing around in a normally desolate area, or whether there are lots of devices operating between foo and bar that are interfering with them. Kurt nodded slowly. The packets we lose could be just as interesting as the packets we don't lose, he said. A light went on in Alan's head. We could be like jazz critics, listening to the silences instead of the notes, he said. They all looked at him. That's very good, Lyman said. Like a jazz critic. He smiled. Alan smiled back. What are we seeing, Craig? Lyman said. Kurt, Alan said. Right, Kurt, he said. Sorry. We're seeing the grid here. See how the access points go further up the spectrum the more packets they get? I'm associated with that bad boy right there. He gestured at the box, blinking silently in the middle of the boardroom table. And it's connected to one other, which is connected to a third. Lyman picked up his phone and dialed a speed dial number. Hey, can you unplug that box on my desk? A moment later, one of the boxes on the display winked out. Watch this, Kurt said, as the remaining two boxes were joined by a coruscating line. See that? It's self-healing. Minimal packet loss. Beautiful. That's hot, Lyman said. That makes me all wet. They all chuckled nervously at his crudity. Seriously? Here, Kurt said, and another window popped up, showing 20 or more boxes with marching ant trails between them. That's a time-lapse of the Kensington network. The boxes are running in different versions of the firmware, so you can see that in some cases you get a lot more oscillation between two similar signals. We fix that in the new version. The graybeard said, How? We flip a coin, Kurt said, and grinned. These guys in Denmark ran some simulations and proved that a random toss-up worked as well as any other algorithm, and it's a lot cheaper computationally. So what's going on just to the northeast of center there? Alan paid attention to the patch of screen indicated. Three access points were playing musical chairs, dropping signal and reacquiring it, dropping it again. Bum hardware, I think. We've got volunteers assembling these boxes from parts. Parts? Kurt's grin widened. Yeah, from the trash, mostly. I dumpster dive for 'em. They grinned back. That's very hot, Lyman said. We're looking at normalizing the parts for the next revision, Alan said. We want to be able to use a single distro that works on all of them. Oh, sure, Lyman said, but he looked a little disappointed, and so did Kurt. Okay, it works, Lyman said. It works, he said, nodding the question at his posse. They nodded back. So, what can we do for you? Alan chewed his lip, caught himself at it, stopped. He'd anticipated a slugfest. Now he was getting strokes. How come you're so nice to us, Kurt said. You guys are the man. He shrugged at Alan. Someone had to say it. Lyman smiled. Yeah, we're the phone company. Brig lumbering dinosaur that is thrashing in the tar pit. The spaz dinosaur that's so embarrassing that all the other that's so embarrassed all the other dinosaurs that none of them want to rescue us. Heh, spaz dinosaur, the East Indian woman said, and they all laughed. Heh, Kurt said, but seriously. Seriously, Lyman said. Seriously. Think a second about the scale of a telco. Of this telco. The thousands of kilometers of wire in the ground. Switching stations. Skilled linesmen and cable pullers. Coders. Switches. Backhaul. Peering arrangements. We've got it all. Ever get on a highway and hit a flat patch where you can't see anything to the horizon except the road and the telephone poles and the wires? Those are our wires. It's a lot of goodness, especially for a big, evil phone company. So we've got a lot of smart hackers, a lot of cool toys, a gigantic budget, the biggest network any of us could ever hope to manage, like a model train set the size of a city. That said, we're hardly nimble. Moving a bell is like shifting a battleship by tapping it on the nose with a toothpick. It can be done, but you spend 10 years doing it, and you're still not sure if you've made any progress. From the outside, it's easy to mistake slow for evil. It's easy to make that mistake from the inside, too. But I don't let it get me down. It's good for a bell to be slow and plodding most of the time. You don't want to go home and discover that we've dispatched the progress ninjas to upgrade all your phones with video screens and a hush mode that reads your thoughts. Most of our customers still can't figure out voicemail. Some of them can't figure out touch-tone dialing. So we're slow. Conservative. But we can do lots of killer R&D. We can roll out really hot upgrades on the back end. We can provide this essential service to the world that underpins its ability to communicate. We're not just cool, we're essential. So you come in here and show us your really swell and interesting meshing wireless data boxes, and I say, that's damn cool. I could think of ways that it could be part of a Bell's business plan in a couple decades' time. A couple decades, Kurt squawked. Jesus Christ, I expect to have a chip in my brain and a jetpack in a couple of decades. Which is why you'd be an idiot to get involved with us, Lyman said. Who wants to get involved with you? No one, Alan said, putting his hands on the table, grateful that the conflict had finally hove above the surface. That's not what we're here for. Why are you here, Alvin? Lyman said. We're here because we're going into the moving data around trade in an ambitious way, and because you folks are the most ambitious moving around tradespeople in town. I thought we'd come by and let you know what we're up to and see if you have any advice for us. Advice, huh? Yeah, you got lots of money and linesmen and switches and users and so forth. You probably have some kind of well-developed cosmology of connectivity with best practices and philosophical ruminations and tasty metaphors. And I hear that you, personally, are really good at making geeks and telcos play together. Since we're going to be kind of a telco, Kurt startled and Alan kicked him under the table, I thought that you could help us get started right. Advice, Lyman said, drumming his fingers. He stood up and paced. 1. Don't bother. This is at least 2 orders of magnitude harder than you think it is. There aren't enough junk computers in all of Toronto's landfills to blanket the city in free wireless. The range is nothing but 300 feet, right? Less if there are trees and buildings, and this city is all trees and buildings. 2. Don't bother. The liability here is stunning. The gear you're building is nice and all, but you're putting it into people's hands and you've got no idea what they're going to do with it. They're going to hack in bigger antennae and signal amplifiers. The radio cops will be on your ass day and night. What's more, they're going to open it up to the rest of the world, and any Yahoo has a need to hide what he's up to is going to use your network to commit unspeakable acts. You're going to be a pirate's best friend in every terrorist's safest haven. 3. Don't bother. This isn't going to work. You've got a cute little routing algorithm that runs with 3 nodes, and you've got a model that may scale up to 300. But by the time you get to 30,000, you're going to be hitting so much latency and dropping so many packets on the floor and incurring so much signaling overhead that it'll be a gigantic failure. You want my advice? Turn this into a piece of enterprise technology, a cheap way of rolling out managed solutions in hotels and office towers and condos, building wide meshes, not city-wide. Those guys will pay. They pay $100 per punchdown now for wired networking, so they'll gladly cough up $1,000 a floor for these boxes, and you'll only need one on every other story. And those people use networks. They're not Joe Consumer who doesn't have the first clue what to do with network connections. Kurt had stiffened up when the rant began, and once he heard the word consumer, he began to positively vibrate. Alan gave him a warning nudge with his elbow. You're shitting me, right? Kurt said. You asked me for advice, Lyman said, mildly. You think we're going to bust our balls to design and deploy all this hardware so that business hotels can save money on cable pullers? Why the hell would we want to do that? Oh, it pays pretty well, Lyman said. He was shaking his head a little, leaning back from the table, and his posse picked up on it, going slightly restless and fidgety, with a room-wide rustle of papers and clicking of pens and laptop latches. Alan held up his hand. Lyman, I'm sorry, we've been unclear. We're not doing this as a money-making venture, Kurt snorted. It's about serving the public interest. We want to give our neighbors access to tools and ideas that they wouldn't have had before. There's something fundamentally undemocratic about charging money for communications. It means that the more money you have, the more you get to communicate. So we're trying to fix that in some small way. We are heartily appreciative of your advice, though. Lyman held up a hand. Sorry, Alan, I don't mean to interrupt, but there's something I wanted to relate to you to, and I've got to go in about 5 minutes. Apparently the meeting was at an end, and I've made a note to myself to tell you about this when I discovered it last week. Can I have the floor? Of course, Alan said. I took a holiday last week, Lyman said. Me and my girlfriend. We went to Switzerland to see the Alps and to visit her sister, who's doing something for the UN in Geneva. So her sister, she's into, I don't know, saving children from vampires in Afghanistan or something, and she has internet access at the office and can't see any reason to drop a connection in at home. So there I was, wandering the streets of Geneva at 7 in the morning, trying to find a Wi-Fi connection so I can get my email and find out how many ways I can enlarge my penis this week. No problem. Outside of every hotel and most of the cafes, I can find a signal for a network called Swisscom. I log onto the network and fire up a browser, and I get a screen asking me for my password. Well, I don't have one, but after poking around, I find out that I can buy a card with a temporary password on it. So I wait until some of the little smoke shops open and start asking if they sell Swisscom internet cards in my terrible, miserable French. And after chuckling at my accent, they look at me and say, "I have no clue what you are talking about," shrug, and go back to work. Then I get the idea to go and ask at the hotels. The first one, the guy tells me that they only sell cards to guests since they're in short supply. The cards are in short supply. Three hotels later, they allow us how they'll sell me a 30-minute card. Oh, that's fine. 30 whole minutes of connectivity. Whoopee! And how much will that be? Only about a zillion Swiss pesos. Don't they sell cards of larger denominations? Oh, sure, 2 hours, 24 hours, 7 days, and each one costs about double the last. So if you want, you can get a 7-day card for about as much as you'd spend on a day's worth of connectivity in 30-minute increments. That's about $300 Canadian for a week, just FYI. Well, paying for $300 for a week's internet is ghastly, but very Swiss, where they charge you if you have more than two bits of cheese at breakfast, and hell, I can afford it. But $300 for a day's worth of 30-minute cards? Fuck that! I was going to have to find a 7-day card or bust. So I ask at a couple more hotels and find someone who will explain to me that Swisscom is the Swiss telco, and that they have a retail storefront a couple of blocks away where they'll sell me all the cards I want in whatever denominations I require. By this time, it's nearly 9 a.m., and I'm thinking that my girlfriend and her sister are probably up eating a big old breakfast and wondering where the fuck I am. But I've got too much invested in this adventure to give up when I'm so close to finding the treasure. And so I hide myself off to the Swisscom storefront, which is closed even though the sign says they open at 9, and by now it's 9:05, and so much for Swiss punctuality. But eventually, this sneering kid with last year's faux hawk comes out and opens the door and then disappears up the stairs and back into at the back of the showroom to the second floor where I follow him. I get behind his counter and say, "Pardonnez-moi," and he holds up a hand and points behind me and says, "Numéro!" I make an elaborate shrug, but he just points again and says, "Numéro!" I shrug again, and he shakes his head like he's dealing with some kind of unbelievable moron. Then he steps out from behind his counter and stalks over to a little touchscreen. He takes my hand by the wrist and plants my hand on the touchscreen, and a little ribbon of paper with 001 slides out. I take it, and he goes back behind the counter and says, "Numéro 1!" I can tell this is not going to work out, but I need to go through the motions. I go to the counter and ask for a 7-day card. He opens his cash drawer and paws through a pile of cards, then smiles and shakes his hand and says, "Sorry, all sold out." My girlfriend is probably through her second cup of coffee and reading brochures for nature walks in the Alps at this point, so I say, "Fine, give me a 1-day card." He takes a moment to snicker at my French, then says, "So sorry, sold out on those too." 2 hours? Nope. Half an hour? Oh, those we got. Think about this for a second. I am sitting there with my laptop in hand at 6 in the morning on a Swiss street connected to Swisscom's network, a credit card in my other hand, wishing to give them some money in exchange for the use of their network. And instead, I have to go chasing up and down every hotel in Geneva for a card, which is not to be found. So I go to the origin of these cards, the Swisscom store, and they're sold out there too. This is not a t-shirt or a loaf of bread. There is no inherent scarcity in 2-hour or 7-day cards. The cards are just a convenient place to print some numbers, and all you need to make more numbers is pull them out of thin air. They're just numbers. We have as many of them as we could possibly need. There is no sane, rational universe in which all the 2-hour numbers sell out, leaving nothing but 30-minute numbers behind. So that's pretty bad. It's the kind of story that netheads tell about bellheads all around the world. It's the kind of thing that I made it my business to hunt down and exterminate here wherever I find it. So I just wrote it off email for a week and came home and downloaded 100,000 spams about my cock's insufficient dimensions and went into work and told everyone I could find about this, and they all smiled nervously and none of them seemed to find it as weird and ridiculous as me. And then, that Friday, I went into a meeting about our new high-speed Wi-Fi service that we're piloting in Montreal, and the guy in charge of the program hands out these little packages to everyone in the meeting, a slide deck and some of the marketing collateral, and a little prepaid 30-minute access card. That's what we're delivering, prepaid cards for internet access. Complet avec shortages and business travelers prowling the bagel joints of Rue Saint-Urbain looking for a shopkeeper whose cash drawer has a few 7-day cards kicking around. And you come in here, and you ask me, you ask the ruling bell, what advice do we have for your metro-wide, free, info-hippie, wireless, dumpster diver, anarcho network? Honestly, I don't have a fucking clue. We don't have a fucking clue. We are a telephone company. We don't even know how to give away free communications. We don't even know how to charge for communications. That was refreshingly honest, Kurt said. I want to shake your hand. He stood up, and Lyman stood up, and Lyman's posse stood up, and they converged on the doorway in an orgy of handshaking and grinning. The Greybeard handed over the access point, and the East Indian ran off to get the other two, and before they knew it, they were out on the street. I liked him, Kurt said. I could tell, Alan said. Remember when you said something about an advisory board? How about if we ask him to join? That is a tremendous and deeply weird idea, partner. I'll send him out the invite when we get home. Well, I think that's enough. I want to say in closing, though, that the story of Swisscom is true. It's, in fact, what happened the first day I went to Geneva for the Electronic Frontier Foundation to represent them at the World Intellectual Property Organization at the United Nations, where we were not saving children from vampires in Afghanistan. I also want to point out that Geneva is the home of the International Telecommunications Union, where theoretically all the standards for telecommunications are set, and it's against that backdrop that this completely brain-damaged networking scheme was deployed. So there you have it. Truth is stranger than fiction. Talk to you next week.